Hi everyone, welcome back to our exploration of the Gospels, of the literal sense of the Gospels. We're continuing today in the farewell discourse, and we've finally come to the end of the farewell discourse. It's taken us about 3 weeks to get through this long farewell discourse. It's broken up into chunks, and there's a whole lot of rich theology in here. So we finally come to the end of John chapter 16, verses 29 to 33, and that's the reading for Mass today, if you go to Mass. So we'll look at the reading, as always, and then see if we can work out what is happening on the literal level of the text. His disciples said to Jesus, "Now you are speaking plainly and not using metaphors. Now we see that you know everything and do not have to wait for questions to be put into words. Because of this, we believe that you came from God." Jesus answered them, "Do you believe at last? Listen, the time will come, in fact it has come already, when you will be scattered, each going his own way and leaving me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. I have told you all this so that you may find peace in me. In the world you will have trouble, but be brave, I have conquered the world." So the context here is the Last Supper has begun and Jesus has been giving the farewell discourse over a number of chapters. And that's essentially, it's quite similar to other writings we find from this time period, where when a leader was going away, he would do a farewell speech that had final instructions for his followers, encouragement in times of difficulty and all sorts of stuff like that. And that's exactly what Jesus does here. So at this point, they're walking towards the Garden of Gethsemane. And Jesus has just said to the apostles, "I have been speaking to you in metaphors, but the day is coming when I will speak plainly to you. On that day, if you ask anything in my name, he will give it to you." So all of that has come just before this. Verse 29, and now it's the apostles that are speaking. "Now you are speaking plainly and not using metaphors." The disciples seem to have misunderstood here what's going on. Jesus has just said, "The day is coming when I will no longer speak to you in metaphors." And for some reason, the disciples have said, "Oh, that day is today. You've started speaking plainly." In fact, what Jesus meant is that sometime in the future, there's going to be a new mode of revelation where they get direct information about Jesus and the Father from the Holy Spirit. But they think he means, "I have started talking to you plainly now." So in other words, they think it has to do with the kind of the figurative quality of Jesus' language. They don't realize that Jesus is talking about different modes of revelation before and after the resurrection. And that's probably fair, because how can they understand, you know, the complexities of the Holy Spirit? And they don't even know that the resurrection is going to happen. So that's their misunderstanding. Verse 30, "Now we see that you know everything and do not have to wait for questions to be put into words." So it appears that what's happened here is the apostles have had this kind of mini revelation. They've worked out that Jesus is reading their minds or something. They feel like he's anticipating their questions before they ask them. And so they think, wow, he's reading our minds. He knows everything. And they go on, "Because of this, we believe that you came from God." So since only God has omniscience, the ability to know everything, and Jesus is showing that here, it makes sense from the apostles' perspective that he must be from God. Jesus has been trying to get them to believe this all along, to believe that he came from God. He's been spending a lot of time telling them this in the Gospel of John. And the apostles now realize this. They have this moment of realization because of what he's been saying to them in the discourse. But keep in mind that in a couple of hours' time, and even it starts when Jesus is arrested in the garden, when Jesus is crucified, the apostles seem to lose their faith that he's the Son of God. Their faith doesn't last very long. They scatter. Scholars point out that although they do give a profession of faith here, they do say, "We believe you come from God," it's not sufficient. And the reason for that is because their profession of faith is based on Jesus' abilities, his ability to know things. They're impressed by what he can do, rather than his identity. That's important because in the Gospels, to believe in Jesus means to believe in his identity as the Son of God and to have some sort of grasp of what that means in terms of his relationship with the Father. It's not so much about his ability to do miracles and his ability to do certain things. And perhaps that's the reason why their faith here is not genuine. So we need to be careful of that trap too, because it's possible to be impressed by this Jesus of Nazareth and his miracle-working abilities, but to still not really believe his identity. Verse 31, Jesus says to them, "Do you believe at last?" So he's been trying to get them to believe this for a long time. Verse 32, "Listen, the time will come, in fact it has come already, when you will be scattered, each going his own way and leaving me alone." And we know, if we know the story, that when Jesus is arrested in the garden a couple of hours later, the apostles do scatter and they leave him alone. When that happens, that's going to show that they did not really believe deep down that he's the Son of God. They lose their faith in that pretty quickly. Perhaps because they were so bogged down in their ideas of what the Messiah is that they expected the Messiah to be victorious and not to be arrested. And there's all these things that come into it. When he says the time has come already, he's probably thinking of Judas. By this point, Judas has left the room and he's gone to betray Jesus, and Jesus knows that. So in a sense, the apostles have already started to scatter. "And yet I am not alone because the Father is with me." So the Father and the Son have this deep, intimate relationship, and Jesus always has the presence of the Father with him, even if everyone else leaves him. Jesus said in chapter 8, verse 28, "The Father is always with me because I do what is pleasing to him." So this is a common theme in the Gospel of John. The Father and the Son are incredibly united. Verse 33, "I have told you all this," so that all this would be everything he's been saying in the farewell discourse, which is about to finish. So everything he's been saying about his identity, the Holy Spirit, and the trials which are coming, "so that you may find peace in me." So when the apostles experience distress in the coming years, and Jesus knows that they are going to experience extreme persecution, he wants the apostles to be able to find peace in the knowledge and power of Jesus. Notice how deep and personal this desire is. Jesus wants his followers, his friends, to have peace. This is a desire that Jesus has. And so that's why he's giving them all this information so that they can look back when they're in times of trouble and remember Jesus' words. Jesus goes on, "In the world you will have trouble," or more literally, tribulation. This is primarily a reference to the persecutions the apostles will experience in the coming years. Many believe it can also apply to Christians today in terms of the conflict that Christians have with society in general, and that's probably true, although we need to keep in mind the literal sense is that he's talking to the apostles about the trouble that they are going to have. Then Jesus says this, "But be brave, I have conquered the world." I like that translation, "be brave." We might be more familiar with other versions, which say, "take heart" or "be of good cheer." So it carries this idea of remaining strong and hopeful in Jesus and not giving up. Be brave when you experience persecution. How can the apostles do that given the extreme persecution they will face? Well, Jesus' answer is, "because I have conquered the world," or "I have overcome the world." Now, Jesus is not thinking of a military victory, although that's probably what the apostles would have thought he meant. What does it mean when Jesus says, "I have conquered the world"? There's two main interpretations of this. It could mean it's the way Jesus, up till this point, has eluded and confounded the ways of the world during his ministry, and he's avoided sin. So he's defeated the world and the way it normally does things by the way he's lived his life. Or it could be that it's a reference to the cross. On the cross, he defeats the power of sin and the world. Now, he hasn't done that yet at the time he's speaking, but by the time the apostles experience the persecution, he will have overcome the world on the cross. So either one of those could be what's in Jesus' mind here. The main point he wants to make to them is that since he has conquered the world and they are going to be sent into the world in his name, ultimately, they cannot lose. Jesus has already won. The author, John, will later reflect on this in his first letter, and he says, "The victory that conquers the world is our faith. Who indeed is the victor over the world but the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God?" That's in 1 John chapter 5, verse 4 and 5. So the Holy Spirit makes the victory of Christ powerfully alive in believers, so they know it to be absolutely true. By virtue of this special faith that the Spirit gives them, the disciples should have courage and confidence to meet whatever situations they might encounter in their mission of love to the world. So that's the last thing Jesus says to them here in this farewell discourse. That's the end of chapter 17, so that is the end of the farewell discourse. If you've been listening up until now, you'll know how dense and complex it is, but also hopefully you've been blessed at the amazing richness which can come from studying the text of the farewell discourse. Now, the events of Holy Thursday don't stop there, though. In chapter 18, which is the next chapter, the events continue. But at the start of chapter 18, Jesus appears to no longer be talking to the apostles. He appears to be speaking in prayer to the Father. And we'll look at that in the coming days. So let's have a look at the Catechism. Where does the Catholic Church draw teachings based on this passage? Where can we find information about the Church's teachings in the Catechism? There's only one spot today. It's a really interesting spot. In paragraph 1808, that's about the cardinal virtues. So the Catholic Church teaches that there are four virtues that determine whether someone is living a good and holy life. In fact, there's more than four, but there's four which are considered to be cardinal or primary virtues. One of those is fortitude, which carries this idea of resilience and persistence. And one of the key passages which teaches us about the need for fortitude is here in John chapter 16. So here's what the Catechism paragraph 1808 says. "Fortitude is the moral virtue that ensures firmness in difficulties and constancy in the pursuit of the good. It strengthens the resolve to resist temptations and to overcome obstacles in the moral life. The virtue of fortitude enables one to conquer fear, even fear of death, and to face trials and persecutions. It disposes one even to renounce and sacrifice his life in defense of a just cause. The Lord is my strength and my song. In the world you have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." So that second quote there is taken straight from Jesus' words here to the apostles. "Be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." So that's a reminder to all of us to persist and have fortitude, even in difficult circumstances, particularly when we're persecuted for being Christian. So we'll leave it there for today. Thank you again for listening. If you're being blessed by this podcast, can I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a Patreon supporter of the ministry? There is no income for this ministry. It's all supported by you as listeners. So if you believe it's worth investing in and you want to help more and more people hear about this podcast and you want the ministry to be able to produce more stuff, then please prayerfully consider becoming a regular donor. And there's information about that in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again tomorrow.